Okay, thank you very much for the invitation to speak here and for setting up this amazing conference. I have, you know, started to work on cosmology very recently, so this has been very instructive and interesting for me to, you know, hear all these perspectives. And I'll be presenting a work in progress done with these Stanford people, so Peter Graham, Bart Horn, Shamit Kashru, and Sajid Rajendran. So from what we know so far, it seems that the current standard model of cosmology is really in nice agreement with known data. And moreover, if we add a period of inflation to this lambda CDM, then, you know, we can solve horizon flatness, explain density perturbations, and so on. However, as we have been reminded here, and we know there are still important challenges and theoretical questions which are not addressed by this setup. And in this talk, I want to focus on the problem of the singularity in the far past. So we know from various cosmological singularity theorems, mainly developed by Penrose and Hawking, that in general we expect the universe to start from a singularity. So it's kind of an important question to ask whether and how it is possible to evade these singularity theorems. If so, can we make non-singular eternal universes? Otherwise, are there useful extensions of these theorems? And another kind of important set of questions is related to whether we can construct stable non-singular cosmologies that go through an infinite cycle of expansions and contractions. And if so, what's the quantum mechanical fate? Of course, all this is kind of very old, perhaps even going back to Tolman and Lemaître, like 80 years ago. More recently, and as we have been hearing here, there are also, you know, quite ambitious scenarios like the Big Bang one or ekpyrotic cyclic universes. However, here in general, you know, in order to go through the singularity, one needs some kind of knowledge from the UV completion. And, you know, the aim of this talk is to be more modest. And instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to present stable cosmological solutions with three properties. So first, the universe is oscillatory between some maximum size and some minimum size, and we can make the maximum size much larger than the minimum size. So essentially, these look like banks and crunches. Related to this, the second point is that we want classical general relativity to always be valid, namely that all distances have to be much larger than the Planck length, and we want to have control over the curvatures. And finally, we only want to use matter that satisfies the null energy condition. So I want to construct solutions with these three properties. I should make a couple of comments here. By point two, of course, I don't mean to say that I believe that classical GR is the final answer. Of course, we know we want a theory of quantum gravity. And moreover, it can happen. And we have a few examples where, you know, a solution which looks singular in general relativity actually becomes regular in the UV completion, say, string theory, for example. Having said that, my point here is to just have a, you know, self-consistent classical solution, which I can just study in a trustworthy you know, way in the realm of classical GR. Okay, so having said that, this is where we are going. First, I'll explain how to evade the singularity theorems and find a class of oscillatory solutions. It turns out that some of these solutions can only be seen in, you know, numerically or in an implicit form. So in point two, I'll focus on a particular example in this set where I can just show to you all analytic results, and this will be the simple harmonic universe. And point three, I'll give kind of a basic analysis of how the classical and quantum dynamics of massless fields look in this geometry. Okay, so this is the organization of the talk. So let's start. For references and things like that, I should say that as far as we know, these analyses and the solutions are new, but of course, there has been a lot of work on this, and in part, we were inspired by a series of papers by Ellis and collaborators. So the main point that we are going to exploit is that if we look at the singularity theorems, it turns out they are very powerful when one has a flat or negatively curved universe. In that case, they only require the null energy condition, meaning, you know, take the energy momentum tensor, and with any null vector, it has to be always greater than zero. Or perhaps in simpler terms, if we take a fluid with this equation of state, W has to be greater than minus one. However, turns out that for a positively curved universe, they require much stronger assumptions, in particular the strong energy condition, so W greater than zero. And of course, we know that many physical systems that we think, you know, make complete sense violate this condition. So this will be our main focus. We'll try to exploit this fact. And then our basic tools will just be classical GR, starting with these ansatz for the F1W metric. Okay. Then we add a fluid. This is the equation of state. Say we also add SEC. And then these are the equations that we all know. I'll just put there for, you know, for reminding you. And K is a curvature, which are in general set to one in what follows. And conservation of energy, as usual, implies that there is a connection between, you know, the energy density and the scale factor through this power. And I call the constant C. This constant will appear a few times in what follows. So it's essentially the energy associated to the fluid in one commoding volume. And I should also say that in a little bit, I have to be more precise by what we mean by this fluid at shorter distances. But for now, this is sufficient. So what do we want? Okay, so we want solutions where we have at least one minimum, call it A minus, and one maximum, A plus. So we take this equation. We have to set the left-hand side to zero because we are at the minimum or at the maximum. So essentially, we have to produce a minimum and a maximum out of this three-term structure. And that is kind of easy, and we know how to do it from high school. So basically, starting from K equals to plus one, to produce the minimum, we are going to balance K against the second term, so the energy density. And then in order to produce the maximum, we're going to balance the second term against the third term. And that is only possible, of course, if we have a negative CC. Okay? So what this is showing in very simple terms is that, in fact, we can evade the inflationary singularity theorems by having these ingredients: positive curvature, negative CC, and negative pressure between minus one and minus a third. Now, these are, of course, quite ordinary and well-understood sources, right? I mean, negative CC is, of course, the example where we have most control in string theory. And, you know, W between minus one and minus a third, of course, that satisfies the null energy condition. And as I said before, given these ingredients, the minimum A minus is produced by, you know, by balancing curvature against rho, as you saw from the previous equation. And then the maximum is produced by balancing rho, the pressure, against the negative CC. And by, you know, playing a little bit more with these FRW equations, you can see that if we choose the CC to be much smaller than essentially this quantity with dimensions of energy associated with the energy of the fluid, and in turn that quantity to be much smaller than the Planck scale, then you can see that the maximum is much larger than the minimum, and that is in turn much larger than the Planck scale. So we indeed can have a parametric difference between, you know, we can see this as banks and crunches, but everything at a scale much larger than the Planck scale, and we avoid singularities. And then you can just say, solve these equations numerically or in some integral form, and then you can show that they have oscillatory behavior following these two non-singular bounces and crunches, and they can go on forever. Now, instead of going more numerically, I'll just restrict from now on to this case, W equals minus two-thirds, because then I can show you analytic results. But, you know, the understanding is that in all this range, we'll get qualitatively similar behaviors. Okay, so let me move to second point, the simple harmonic universe. Now, when W is equal, equal to minus two-thirds, if you look at the first FRW equation, you essentially see that it's an equation for a harmonic oscillator. So the frequency of the harmonic oscillator is given by the CC, and then it's displaced from the origin by this quantity C, which, remember, is related to the energy density associated to the fluid with negative pressure. So the solution is, of course, quite simple. So it's a sine or a cosine with frequency omega. Omega is the square root of the CC. And then it's useful to parameterize both the amplitude and the displacement away from the origin by this dimensionless number gamma. And the definition of gamma is the following. So it's the ratio between the CC and the energy associated to the fluid. So this will be the main parameter from now on. This is the solution, and we have omega and gamma parameterizing the displacement away from the origin and the amplitude. And it turns out that the interesting limit, perhaps, you know, for applications for, you know, phenomenological constructions or things like this, when gamma is much more than one, because then you can see that the minimum, which is attained when the cosine is minus one, over the maximum, which is attained when the cosine is one, is essentially given by gamma. So in this limit, the square root simplifies to, you know, 1 minus gamma over 2, and then a minimum over a maximum is essentially order gamma, and then this tells us how to get this to be parametrically small by essentially, you know, tuning the cosmological constant. Okay, this is a nice and simple solution, but of course the important question is this stable? Here we have two types of sources. The first one is homogeneous perturbations. And of course, this was the main problem, as you all know, with the Einstein static universe. So in that case, you know, this was a very simple solution, but one had to tune both, you know, the energy in the dust and the size of the universe to precisely match the value of the cosmological constant. And as a result, every tiny homogeneous perturbation was producing a huge instability. Now, in this case, we don't expect that to happen. And the main reason why we don't expect that is, of course, because we have a parameter space of solutions and we haven't tuned anything. Right? So intuitively, homogeneous perturbations just correspond to displacements in this parameter space of solutions. So they should lead to qualitatively similar oscillating universes. Okay? More concretely, we can just write down the most general homogeneous perturbation. It has this form. So we allow for three different scale factors multiplying the one forms in the sphere. This is the so-called, you know, Bianchi type 9 metric, I think. And then the different scale factors are expanding around the background with small fluctuations. And if you look at these equations, you find that all the solutions are small oscillatory functions for the delta A's. So it seems we are okay with homogeneous perturbations. Now, what about inhomogeneous modes? Take, for example, a scalar inhomogeneous perturbation. So we have fluctuations in both the energy density and the pressure. And the scalar mode is parameterized by this single function psi with one gauge. And then after massaging a little bit all the equations, you get an equation where only psi appears. It has this form. So second time derivative, then there is some Hubble friction. And then there is a mass term that has two types of contributions. The first one comes from time dependence in the background, right? And the second one comes from the Laplacian along the S3. Right. And here I have defined the speed of sound as usual as a coefficient of proportionality between the inhomogeneous pressure fluctuation and density fluctuation. Now, as I said before, we need a perfect fluid with negative pressure. So, we need a fluid with negative pressure. So if this were really a perfect fluid up to shorter scales, then we'll be in big trouble, right? Because the speed of sound will be equal to W, which is less than minus a third. And this means here from the Laplacian term that, you know, each higher and higher momentum mode would be more unstable. They would have the wrong sign. So, you know, in more physical terms, we would get sound waves, but with imaginary speed. And this is, just a UV catastrophe. So we really have to avoid this. So how do we do that? So how do we try to save this solution? Now, the main physics idea is the following. So we need negative pressure, but only in order to find a homogeneous background. So only for these homogeneous modes at long distances. But of course, at shorter scales to which the inhomogeneous perturbations are sensitive, we are free to say that instead of a fluid, we have a solid. And the reason why we want to do that is because, of course, the solid has more resistance against deformation, so it can make these perturbations stable. And here I want to refer you to a very beautiful paper by Boucher and Sperger, where they essentially proposed this idea. And what they were trying to do is to explain the dark energy by using a solid dark matter component. I think probably now this has been ruled out, but it's not far away from kind of reasonable idea. So again, the intuition is that while at large distances this will behave as a fluid, as we go to shorter scales, in fact, the energy momentum tensor has extra components that reflect the fact that the solid has elastic resistance against deformations. And if this resistance can be made large enough, then the speed of sound can be turned to be positive, and that would stabilize the inhomogeneous modes. Now, a concrete example is we are in the case when W is equal to minus 2/3. That corresponds to domain walls. So what these people show, and in a sequel of papers, is that if we start from a domain walls and we follow the cosmological evolution, they can form a frustrated network by, yeah. Yes. No. There are additional, it is different. I mean, they showed explicitly how you get an additional component in the longitudinal speed, by having these tensile deformations and elastic components. We can then go over that paper. But they show explicitly how the longitudinal modes get an extra term that can stabilize them. I don't want to do that because it would cause a crunch. Before you saw the solution, right, it needs to have W between -1 and -3. So if I have a big enough perfect fluid on top of that and it can overcompensate that, it will produce a crunch, right? So I don't want to do that, yeah. I'm just saying, you can't take this to be, at large distances, it would have negative W as we want, and then at small distances, I'm just changing the microscopics, and it would have extra additions to the longitudinal modes, making the sound speed positive now. I agree there could be other alternatives. I'm just saying, within our simplest setup where we have just these three ingredients, I think this is the only choice, right? Okay, so let's continue. So they essentially showed how starting from a system of domain words and following their time evolution, you can form a frustrated network, meaning that you will get like patches of domain words of say order hundreds of parsecs or things like that, and then at the microscopic scale they would have this additional resistance and they can give positive speed of sound. Okay, so this is so far the simple harmonic universe. So it has these three ingredients, positive curvature, negative CC, and this frustrated network of domain words. Of course, as you can imagine, now the perturbations are more complicated. In this setup, we are still studying that. But I do want to give you a more, perhaps a simpler, but also more conceptual idea of how the dynamics looks in this universe. So let me consider classical and quantum dynamics of a massless scalar field. This is kind of universal because we also expect, we know that all these solutions should have at least gravitons, and they are well modeled by this massless scalar field. So I'm just changing to conformal time to avoid extra factors there. This is the action, kinetic term, Laplacian in the sphere. And analytically, as we know, it's good to go to the canonically normalized scalar field chi, which is A times phi, and then this is the equation of motion after expanding in spherical harmonics. Yeah. I'll get to that in 2 minutes. Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, yeah. Was your question related or? Good. I'll get to that at the end. Of course, I'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. Okay. So this is equation of motion. You see, it has this effective mass given by the momentum along the sphere, and then this time dependence. And of course, this is simply a Schrödinger problem for a particle in a periodic potential, right? So write this equation this way. The potential is A prime prime over A. Primes are derivative with respect to the conformal factor, and then this is the energy level, right? So, this is now the problem we have to solve, and this is how a typical potential looks like. So for a long time, it is almost constant, and then it gets these kinks and has the periodicity, essentially, of our universe that keeps cycling and cycling. There are basically three regimes here. First, the homogeneous mode, so it's a particle moving with zero energy here. Then, the width of this walls is essentially given by the square root of gamma, this dimensionless parameter that was the ratio between the CC and the energy scale. So for momenta, then we'll have a separate range when the momenta are comparable to this width. And finally, we have high momentum modes up here when the momentum is much larger than one over the width, and then we expect to recover flat space solutions, right? So essentially, we have mapped the problem of dynamics of these massive particles in a harmonic universe to just electron in a block potential, right? Which is a kind of a well-understood condensed matter system. However, the main difference is, of course, that in the block potential, we want to impose periodic boundary conditions, and that leads to the block waves. While here, we're doing cosmology, so we want to just set initial conditions there and see what happens. Okay? So basically, what we're going to do is, at least conceptually, in each of these flat regions, you get a decoupled set of harmonic oscillators, and then you have to understand how to patch to, from here to here by imposing continuity conditions for the wave function there. So this is the summary of what we get. I'm going back again now to the original scalar field because, it may be easier to understand. So for the homogeneous mode, we get that the scalar field grows linearly. So with the number of cycles. So cycle by cycle, it keeps growing linearly. And this very mild growth is, of course, related to my previous statement that now the system is stable under homogeneous perturbations. Now, in this intermediate range of momenta, you get an exponential growth with the number of cycles, but essentially the coefficient of the exponential is one, or is order, an order one number. And here I have defined Kc to be this critical value of the momentum, which, as I said before, is given by the width of these wells in the potential. So essentially, for very small k, it's an exponential, and when k is order Kc, this becomes constant. And when k is greater than Kc, then you recover the oscillatory solutions, which is, as you know, consistent with the fact that we should recover Minkowski modes. Okay, so this is how the dynamics looks like. I should also, this is kind of, you know, conceptual here, but we have done this also numerically to verify this. And Minkowski modes, they also have a, you know, modulation given by the periodicity of the universe. Okay, thanks. Okay, so these are the solutions. Now the question is, and also related to what they are asking, what's the back reaction from this component? So essentially what we have to do is we have to compute the total energy stored in the modes up to this cutoff 1 over the width and compared to the background. Now, of course, classically, the amplitude of the scalar field is not fixed. So what you get when you do this is that back reaction becomes important after a number of cycles given by the log of essentially 1 over the initial value in Planck units. Okay, so if you decide this to be, say, of order TV, then this means that for a long number of cycles, classical perturbations will be under control, and then they become important, and then we don't know what they do. Now, quantum mechanically, the initial value is fixed, as we know from the harmonic oscillator. There is a typical value of the fluctuation. In our case, it's given by this combination here, and this is, then this effect is interpreted as particle production. So cycle by cycle, we keep producing these massless particles, and they keep increasing the entropy, indeed. So what this shows is that then, you know, we can just plug this value in here, and it means that we'll, you know, cycle by cycle, we will build up this component of radiation, and they will become important after a number of cycles n star given by the log of these combinations. And after this, physically, well, too much radiation, you know, this is positive pressure, and it leads to a singular crunch, and the solution is over. But notice from here that, of course, we have this is essentially the CC, gamma is small, so it's natural to choose these numbers to be small, so we can have a parametrically large number of bounces. Okay. Okay, so let me just conclude here. I have presented to you a class of classical solutions between the VM, in the VM of general relativity, of cosmologies that go through an infinite set of non-singular bounces. The solutions are based on positive curvature, negative CC, and negative pressure satisfying the non-logical conditions. I didn't say this before, but if gamma is not very small, then the classical perturbations never grow. So it seems that, you know, classically, forgetting this issue of entropy production, we'll be able to evade the singularity theorems. Of course, we want to also focus in the limit of small gamma, and then even classically, eventually there are, you know, these perturbations become important, and then, well, we have to understand better what the solution does. More interestingly, quantum mechanically, there is particle production. This eventually becomes important after a large number of cycles and leads to a singular crunch. So in a way, this constitutes a quantum extension of the singularity theorems. It's also kind of universal because, as I said before, we always expect to have at least gravitons in these solutions. And this toy model for scale, a massless scalar, is a good model for that. So, of course, the next interesting step, and we are thinking about this, would be to, you know, try to combine our solutions with other types of components, like, you know, inflation, radiation, or matter domination. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah. And in fact, this quantum mechanical calculation, yeah, was also going in that way. I should say that, yeah, you could also think. Okay, I'm not sure I have yet a, you know, mathematical theorem, but at this level, I don't find any other way of, you know, getting a, you know, a non-singular bounds that satisfies the non-energy condition. And then I think this quantum mechanical, you know, analysis would go through. So I think it's pretty general. I should also say that, of course, the singularity theorems are correct, right? We just exploit one, you know, I mean, one way around, which is using positive curvature. So in a sense, this is a refinement of that. Yes. Yes. And in fact, here, yeah, that's a good point also, because here you see that, you know, as the maximum radius grows, it also turns out that the minimum value decreases. So in fact, what happens is that you first hit a crunch before violating any holographic bound. So, you know, So, but it's related. So, you know, when one grows, the other decreases. So, and then you do hit a singularity. So, and in that sense, of course, it's a, you know, singularity theorem, right? Yeah. No, even as I showed, even classically, the perturbations start to grow. It's just that in that case, at least, well, it's easy to see that they grow for, you know, for small gamma, then you have this, we are in this range, so, sorry, which was this, you know, we are here, so, you know, for small enough moment, so in this range of momenta, for the scalar field, this grows exponentially, cycle by cycle, right? It's just that here, I don't know what's the value, the initial value of the scalar field. It's arbitrary. So classically, I would also get a problem, but I have another parameter. While quantum mechanically, you know, this is a harmonic oscillator, so the initial value is fixed by a typical, you know, quantum fluctuation. Yeah. Even classically, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, quantum mechanically it's easier to see because then it's just radiation, and we know that radiation will make it crunch. While classically, then of course you have to ask, well, how does this clamp? Does it form galaxies? You know, then it's a more complicated analysis. Right? But I think with enough effort that can be shown also. Yeah. So are you saying, is that an inhomogeneous perturbation? Yeah, I agree. Here I was just studying the scalar in homogeneous perturbation, and of course there are vector and tensor modes also that I didn't study, but I would expect that, you know, qualitatively they would lead to the same, you know, type of instability, some kind of exponential growth with a coefficient that is order one as here. I just did the scalar model because I've never worked on perturbations, so this was, you know, simplest for me to understand, but I agree, there are other types of instabilities, yeah. Here, for large enough gamma, there is no exponential instability. So for when gamma is, say, I think, order one quarter or larger, then we don't find growing modes, at least in the scalar sector. Then I'll have to do the analysis that you say to see what happens. Yeah. Yeah, thanks.